All right, let's jump on in. Activist judges. Let's talk about activist judges for a minute. And there's a bill right now that's floating through the House, and I understood they were going to try and vote on it today, although I'm seeing no updates on it. So I'll just tell you this. The whole idea that a federal district court judge can issue a nationwide injunction on something that is not otherwise nationwide in scope is troublesome. It just is. There's no way around it. Now, there are going to be times when they can have a nationwide scope because there's no way around it. And I say that in, for instance, the context of the transgenders in the military. Well, you can't allow transgenders to be in the military in Texas and then it not be something that's really impacting nationwide. So anything enjoining the transgender policy in the military is probably going to be nationwide no matter what. But generally speaking, on situations like this deportation issue, you're not just going after the policy. You have to have a representative plaintiff. You have to have somebody standing in the shoes. And so the courts have now ruled that it's very likely that you're going to wind up having to have venue in the area where the parties who are being named are located. And, oh, by the way, B, that you can't issue nationwide injunctions on everything. Let me rephrase. The court has not ruled that. The House has got a bill to work on that. The House has got a bill by Representative Daryl Issa today that would prevent the nationwide injunction from being a regular course of business. Okay, this is a bit dicey. I think there's going to be times when a nationwide injunction is the only way that an injunction could work, because to have patchwork quilt would be more detrimental than not. I think we also need to be careful of the fact that when we undo something, we're undoing something that we may want ourselves later. That being said, there's got to be a better way to do it. Because what I do agree with is the notion that one activist judge like this Judge Anna Reyes, I mentioned her to you in my monologue. Judge Anna Reyes is a literal activist. If you look at her history, she's on record as a openly gay judge saying that there is no such thing as just two genders, now ruling on transgenders in the military. What does that tell you? She's coming in with an absolute bias. She's also openly campaigned against Trump. She's also openly supported Democrat causes with her own personal finances to a pretty good degree. She's also been out there speaking on DEI and microaggressions and all kinds of other wokeisms. She is an activist judge. She should have recused. We shouldn't have to have a nationwide injunction on a sensitive issue that a judge has openly expressed bias on and is so absolutely clouded in their judgment that we're sitting there just like rubbing our face like a face palm, trying to figure out how in the world this judge is the one A, got assigned, and B, that got left with the case. All right. Typically speaking, it's the judge's job to recuse. But the parties can file a motion to recuse and put it on the record they think it's necessary. In this case, I also know that what the Trump administration did want, though, was they wanted to go to the higher court and try to get the thing dealt with on a broad level, and they did. Now, let me just say this. Here's a lesson for you in federal district court judges. A lot of people talk about how can they have so much power? But listen, there's an old axiom in the practice of law that the most powerful person in the world is a federal district court judge. Why? Why do I say that? Because a federal district court judge is the only one that can tell the president of the United States, the leader of the free world, what to do. Everything after that is just an appeal of what that judge did. So when something goes up to the 11th Circuit or wherever else, you know, for appeal, or from there to the Supreme Court of the United States, what they're doing is they're appealing what happened at the lower level, AKA the federal district court. So when the district court judge enters a ruling, they can say, Mr. President, you cannot do this thing. The appellate courts either affirm or reverse that ruling. They don't make their own unilateral rulings sua sponte, they call it. Sua sponte means of their own accord. So the federal district court judge, how do we avoid having activists, single judges, somehow decide everything, including nationwide injunctions, when they're so biased? I think ISIS, Bill, I understand why ISIS is doing. I get ISIS. I've not had a chance to read it, so I'm going on talking points as much as anything. But here's what I do like. Jonathan Turley, who I respect greatly, the Georgetown law professor who you often see on Fox and other networks, Jonathan Turley said that he believes that one of the better ways of handling this is to say that before a nationwide injunction can be issued, it has to be issued by a 3-judge panel at the least. In other words, one judge by themselves can't do it. It's almost like getting a second opinion in medical world. You want to know that more than one set of eyes and more than one signature is on the notion of something as broad and sweeping as a single judge. So I personally like that. I mean, at first blush, I like that. I like the idea of a 3-judge panel saying, we will not issue that nationwide injunction until we've had a chance to agree and have at least a 2-to-1 majority rule on it. What that does is it also makes it harder to reverse.
Yeah, but then the rabbit hole continues of, well, the judges on that panel be biased, and it keeps going, and it's...
But the likelihood of having all three biases as opposed to just the one is more remote.
Yeah.
And you get an opportunity to present in a variety of facets and hit different markers, whereas one judge might not care as much about certain facts, the other judge might. Mm-hmm. One judge might not be as swayed by a certain legal precedent, the other judge might. And then they also come in with their own understandings of years of practicing law, and they bring in a perspective that might be different than the one by themselves.
Yeah.
And Anna Reyes should never have been by herself on this ruling about transgenders in the military. All right, we're going to take a break right now. We'll take the break. We'll come right back. I got more on this. Activist judges, I got several things for you to know, including recent rulings as of today. Yeah, I'm going to update you. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just making common sense like a superpower. All right, so we're going back to topic here. Activist judges, number one on the Triple Dipper. Activist judges. Listen, they're out there. And JP, I tell you what, I'm going to call up Audio One. You got that one? How long is that thing, by the way? It's only like 21 seconds, isn't it?
No, this one's a minute 10.
Oh, that's a bigger one. We got it. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I want to lead off with a comment by Senator Eric Schmidt. And my recollection was he was also the Attorney General for the state of Missouri before he was a U.S. Senator. But Senator Eric Schmidt was on Fox News with Harris Faulkner talking about activist judges. And here's what he had to say. Go ahead.
Really, for the first 200 years of our country, we really didn't see any of this kind of stuff. This is a crisis of the 21st century, and specifically with liberal activist judges. In the first less than 100 days of President Trump's administration here, you've seen more injunctions than the 12 years between Obama's two terms and Joe Biden. So these judges are more than willing to play an outsized role beyond their Article 3 authority. So there's a few things that are happening. One is some legislation to say one single judge can't do this. Maybe you need a panel. That Senate Judiciary hearing that you heard that you clipped up from last week was Senator Grassley's legislation, which would say those district court judges really only have jurisdiction for the parties that are in front of them. I think broadly speaking, though, as these cases make their way up to the Supreme Court, President Trump is going to be successful because he's either operating as commander in chief with his Article 2 powers as the executive or controlling the programming and personnel of the Article 2 branch. Unlike Joe Biden, who was trying to steamroll the Constitution by saying OSHA could force 100 million people to get a vaccine well beyond his authority. Really, what President Trump's trying to do is actually rein in the power of the administrative state. So I think he's going to be successful.
Okay, great layout. And he points out, I remember specifically when Biden stood there at a podium, kind of soft selling the whole thing. Talking about the mandatory vaccines and OSHA, and he even made the comment, "Oh, some of my advisors have told me that this is probably not constitutional, but I'm just going to do it anyway." And we don't have that from Trump. He's moving forward with a well-researched plan, and it's starting to pay off already. So when we get back from the break here in a moment, I'm going to tell you we had two major decisions in the last 12 hours, two major decisions from the Supreme Court that sort of backhanded the liberal judges who are making edicts that have nationwide impact despite the fact that they've got a bias. Now, let me just point out that there's several things about these rulings that are interesting. Part of them are the content. Part of them are the fact, though, that we are setting new precedent, and that's a huge deal. When the Trump administration gets a Supreme Court precedent like what they got in the last 12 hours, what it means is for future administrations, these things could still happen, unless the Supreme Court rules that some nuance of it was different and they do what's called distinguishing the case. I think what we're doing right now is we're watching Trump. As much as I would like these judges to be recused and to be thrown off the case, I like the fact that Trump is going through the process. I like the fact they're going to the appellate level. I like the fact that we're getting rulings, and I like the fact that these rulings have an air of finality to them. Now, we're not entirely done. These were preliminary injunctions that were being appealed. These weren't the final merits of the case. There was not a final order on the merits itself. But what we are watching, though, is a judge not being allowed to just simply stop things because they feel like it. It's a dynamic situation. It's a very fluid environment. But I got some news. As soon as we get back, I'll tell you all about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama and Tennessee's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two on a Taco Tuesday. And we got a new sound effect. I'm dying to hear it again. I know you did a short video, and it cracked me. I saw it this morning. It cracked me up. So yesterday, the president coined a new word. I'm going to get back to my topic here in a minute, but since I have no guests, I've got all the time in the world. He coined a new phrase yesterday, a new word, as he is wont to do. I love this. He was telling people not to panic about the tariffs and all that kind of stuff. And then he literally told Republicans to not be panickins. That's actually the sound of a screaming goat.
That's a real goat, by the way.
It's a real goat. We got that yesterday, and it still cracks me up. So now, anytime I say the word panicking, we're going to have that sound effect playing. My gosh.
It's a goat, but also, I mean, it's pretty much what every mainstream media talking head has been sounding like.
That's right.
Yes.
You know, things are out there. Tariffs and bad stuff and doom and gloom and everything's going to be bad and root canal and stuff and panicking. Okay. Wow. Okay. Listen, the reason why I thought of that just now is because I got to tell you guys about something new. So you may already be aware, I've said it before on the show, that the Right Side Radio, Right Side Media website, we have a merchandise store. Got a brand new shirt in. It's a really high quality, one of those real soft t-shirts. And the back of it is the history and the making of the American flag. I love it. It points out everything on there, like why there's this many stripes, why these colors are chosen for the field of blue. And anyway, all said and done, the shirt is very cool. And we were talking among the staff yesterday. We thought, you know what? With all the tariffs going on, everybody's worried about costs going up. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to make a tariff-free zone for our Right Side merchandise, and we're going to give a promo code. And I was thinking about making the promo code Panikin. But I decided, no, that won't work. What can we do instead? So Butter said, why don't we just make the word tariff? So here's the deal. If you want to go check out our merchandise, we got t-shirts, we got coffee mugs, we got the highball glasses engraved with the Right Side Media Bulletproof Influence logo, and it says it has a bullet embedded inside of the glass. If you want to look at our stuff and buy something right now, the promo code for a short time is tariff. If you type in the promo code tariff when you order it, you get an automatic 10% discount. So that is right now to relieve us of the panicking stress and give you an opportunity to buy something at a discount rate. So anyway, go check out rightsidemedia.org. That's our website, rightsidemedia.org. Go to the shop tab. Pick something out. Make you a purchase. It's whatever you want to buy. It's with the promo code tariff, it is 10% off. Am I right in saying 10%? It is right.
From yeah, my
I didn't just give away more money, did I?
No.
Okay. Phil, it's supposed to be 5%. Oh, shoot. Well, now it's 10. Anyway, that's for all of y'all. If you're listening on the show, we're not advertising that broad base right now. The first ones to go to it and get the 10% discount for tariffs. Whatever you do, don't be a panicking. You're so quick on that button, man. But let's go back to the Dipper. Activist judges. Let's finish this up. First of all, a couple things happened in the last 12 hours. Judge Boasberg, remember him? Judge Boasberg is the judge who is trying to shut down President Trump's efforts to deport illegal criminal aliens who are being deported to the El Salvador prison, CICOT prison. And Trump has been relying upon what is known as the Alien Enemies Act of 1798. 1798, yes. It is literally a nearly 227-year-old law. It's only been used three times in the history of our country. The War of 1812, World War I, and World War II. In this particular case, Trump, using that law, has designated drug cartels, Tren de Aragua, MS-13, as foreign enemies. And think about it, there is precedent for this. Well, Phil, they don't have geographic territory. They don't have governance. They don't even have a flag. Well, how about ISIS? How about Al-Qaeda? Those are non-state actors, and they are indeed terrorist organizations. So the Alien Enemies Act declared that the MS-13 and Tren de Aragua and the rest of them are now alien enemies, and he's been able to snatch people up, and without the usual long duration of their due process and other, they're illegal, first of all, they're Tren de Aragua or MS-13, and then they're packed off to El Salvador. Judge Boasberg was trying to put a stop to that. Judge Boasberg is the one who's saying, turn that plane around. You know, that it was really kind of out of hand. Judge Boasberg got smacked last night by the Supreme Court. Because while the case is not over, and that's important to note, while the case is not over, the case has now been, A, transferred out of his court and down to the Southern District of Texas. Whoop, whoop. And then it's also it was ruled by the Supreme Court that his injunction, his attempt to stop it in the meantime, that stay has been lifted and Trump can move forward. Can I have some applause for this? That was an absolute win. Wow. Thank you. Thank you very much. It was an absolute win for the Trump administration. They went through the process, they got it done, and they got it done in tall fashion, man.
Real quick, I mean, you mentioned precedent in the last segment.
Yeah.
What, since this isn't like a ruling on a final, you know, stay of the, like this is a, it's not a ruling on the final, you know, ruling of a case. What precedent does this set? Like, does this effectively set the precedent that presidents have, you know, unilateral, you know, authority to deport whoever he wants? Obviously, he can't deport U.S. citizens, but does this, you know, set a precedent like whoever Trump wants to deport, if they're here illegally, he can deport them? Or is this not necessarily set that precedent, you know, long term?
Okay, there's going to be two types of precedent here. All right, there's going to be the precedent that is lasting or is overarching, and then there's going to be situational precedent. All right, so the situational precedent that we have right now is that the court has looked at this and decided that the judge's ruling was or his injunction was incorrect. And without ruling fully on the merits of the case, the court basically said, we see this as a law. And see, to get an injunction or to resist an injunction, whoever wins in that case or in the injunction fight has to be seen as having the likelihood of prevailing on the merits. Well, it's obvious the Supreme Court has now intoned to the lower court, we tend to see this as something that the Trump administration could very well prevail on the merits in the long run. That sends a signal to the lower court. Be very careful what you do, because if they appeal this up, you're likely going to lose. So there's that situational precedent. The other one, though, is what we just saw today is Judge Boasberg had it taken out of his court. He had to cancel a hearing today that was otherwise scheduled because the Supreme Court ruling said that the appropriate venue for any further proceedings like these, would be the district in which the plaintiffs are subject to potential removal currently being held. In other words, Judge Boasberg, this is not your jurisdiction. Jurisdictional issues are, those are soul-crushing for a judge. A jurisdictional issue means this judge does not even have the right to speak to this case anymore.
Now, where's Boasberg in D.C., right?
I believe Boasberg's in D.C.
Yeah.
So this federal district court judge has no right to even speak over this case. He can make no rulings. He has no jurisdictional authority over this case. And there's two types of jurisdiction. There's jurisdiction over the subject matter, and there's jurisdiction over the person. He has no jurisdiction in this case over the persons because they're being held in the Southern District of Texas.
Yeah.
So from now on, wherever the venue is where the plaintiffs are in the cases like this, that's where it has to go, which means they can't forum shop it into the D.C. courts.
Yeah. Or some activist judge from Seattle says, you can't deport the MS-13 folks from Texas.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Perfect. So, yeah, you got two things there. You got a very situational, something that kind of speaks to the case that they need to think about. But then you also got an absolute that it does appear the Supreme Court is saying the appropriate venue for any such further proceedings will be where those people are being held or detained. So, shoot, go build the prison in Alabama.
Yeah.
You'll know what you're probably going to get. And by the way, we have a couple.
Yeah.
So that was huge. That happened last night. That was Judge Boasberg getting backhanded by the Supreme Court. It's out of his case now, out of his courtroom. It has moved down, I believe, to the Southern District of Texas. I'm not sure if venue is transferred yet. I'm assuming the plaintiffs have to go ahead and pick up venue when they move, or I'm not sure if it's going to be reassigned immediately. But then the other one that happened today, where is this one? It wasn't even on my radar. But you may recall the Trump administration has been working to downsize government, to right-size government. And one of the things they did was the Trump administration went in and found all these bloated departments that had been hired with DEI hires and, using Inflation Reduction Act money and, all the things that happened, like, we're going to hire 87,000 new IRS agents and all the stuff that the Biden administration did. And so the Trump administration went in and said, okay, first of all of you that are probationary employees, I'm sorry, we're not going to keep you. You have a chance to reapply later. But we're not going to keep all the probationary employees, tens of thousands nationwide, tens of thousands. It's tough love, man. But the Supreme Court ruled last night the president does have the authority to let those people go. So the Supreme Court on Tuesday sided with the Trump administration and upheld the massive firing of tens of thousands of probational federal employees who had been suing to get their jobs back. It's an amazing thing to think that the boss is not allowed to fire you.
So that one was ruled on the final merits of the case, right?
I think that one is done. I think that one is pretty clear.
So that one sets a precedent, like Trump can make these, or any president can make these decisions that he wants.
It would appear so. Mm-hmm. Majority of the high court ruled the plaintiffs, which were 9 nonprofit organizations who had sued to reinstate, also lack standing to sue. So there's that. So the idea that the president has no authority to terminate employees who are under his watch appears to have been rejected, and the standing issue was also addressed. So that's two big things. And by the way, that's huge. Both of those are huge. The Trump administration taking the victory lap and well deserved. We'll take a break right now. We'll come back from the break, and I got a little more on this topic because there's a little more on this topic. Phil Williams. Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just saving the world one soundbite at a time. Hey, so, immediately upon receiving the judge's order, the Trump administration got to work. The judge's order about the deportation of criminal illegal aliens. For instance, exclusive to Fox News, Dateline this morning, the Department of Homeland Security and the Internal Revenue Service quickly came to an agreement about how to access taxpayer information about illegal immigrants. Now, I did not know this, but the IRS actually collects taxes to some degree, from people who are here illegally, and they are willing now to turn that over. Of course, it's got to be looked at. How do you abide by, you know, the privacy laws and all that kind of stuff? But immediately, the Trump administration began using the whole of government approach to going after it. And then you got a situation that's, I'm still getting my head around it. I'm still trying to figure out, was this really a mistake, or was it something that could have been done differently or better, or for that matter, does it need to be undone at all? But there's a guy named Kilmar Abrego Garcia. He's a Maryland resident, and I say resident because that's where he lived, not that he was a citizen. But he was scooped up in the initial wave of deportation to the El Salvador prison. And there is some understanding now that he might should have not been in there because he was here with a legal status. I think the legal status was just simply that he had been granted asylum by the Biden administration, if I'm not mistaken. It wasn't like he was on a green card or anyway, I could be wrong. But the reality is this has become quite the thing. The liberals are saying, this is clear evidence that the Trump administration doesn't care about people. They'll send anybody down. They could scoop up a U.S. citizen. No, they won't. Jackass. That's not what's going to happen. But the fact is, we do have an order from Chief Justice John Roberts blocking the lower courts from requiring Trump to go get him and bring him back from El Salvador right now. How about that? That's another example of the Trump administration is working the appeals process, and the appeals process is working. Good stuff. Now, there's probably going to be something come along that we're going to look at and go, holy crap. But right now, the Trump administration is prevailing on the things that it's trying to do. This guy, Abrego Garcia, I don't know his full status. We'll find out more. But there's been some indication that the DOJ's attorney said that this had been done incorrectly. Like, why would you do that? Why do you go to court and go, yeah, judge, we really did screw that one up. I got that one wrong. Well, this particular guy, Auguste Flintier, that's his name, was suspended. Auguste Flintier, who was the attorney for the DOJ in the Immigration Litigation Division, was basically put on leave by Attorney General Pam Bondi because he failed to zealously pursue the interests of the state. In other words, he went to court and he didn't really do a good job. So what I'm loving here is the Trump administration is saying, look, if you're not going to do the job, then we don't need you. So how about you just go to the house? Plenty more on this stuff. I will say this. One of the last things I'll point out is I got this article from Daily Signal, Dateline yesterday, and this is Jonathan Turley, I mentioned earlier. George Washington University law professor Jonathan Turley urging Congress and the White House to not just go to war with the judiciary, because everybody on the bench is not a bad judge. And sometimes there will be decisions we don't like, but that's part of the rule of law. But the ones who are overreaching and how to deal with that, this is where Jonathan Turley was advocating for something more along the lines of national level injunctions being done by a 3-judge panel as opposed to 1 judge having complete sway. I agree with that. I think that's a great idea. And what I don't agree with, though, is trying to break the system that is still the best one in the nation. It has got warts and blemishes. I am first to admit it. And I've seen some of them. And I've seen people get swept up. And we watch, look at the Jan Sixers. The Jan Sixers are a classic example of people who got swept up and they shouldn't have. It is still the best system in the world. And I don't want to just break it because we don't like the decisions we get. Let's go ahead and make it better. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.